Welcome back to another episode of the Huxley Morton podcast, where this week I have the pleasure of being joined by Robert Buckley. Robert, you are the chief people architect, I believe, at Invader Biosciences. And I think when I reached out to you, I said, look, I've never really come across a chief people architect before. And, you know, chief people officer, yes. But look, if you could perhaps, in your own words, give us an overview as to, who you are, what you do as a chief people architect, quick summarize of Invader Biosciences, if you will.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thanks for having me on, James. I super appreciate it. So chief people architect is trying to connote kind of how I lead and think about HR. Mm-hmm. And what I love doing and what I'm good at is building things. And so, yeah, there's always the stuff that you got to get done in the HR world. And that's fine. Every single job always has, you know, the routine things that you need to do and do well. Mm-hmm. But if you're an architect, and how I think about HR and people is, what are we building? And what are we doing that's innovating? What are we doing to use data and math? How are we creating? How are we being amazing in candidate experience, employee experience, and things like that?
Yeah.
And so that's the way I lead. That's the way I think about it. And so if you get me, that's what you get. And like, I'm just not a good fit when they were like, you know, there's some jobs like, hey, you know, we don't want you to change anything. Can you just kind of come in and do HR stuff? I'm like, no, I'm not a good fit. You know, let's finish up the coffee, have a great day, and you guys should get something else. So
fair enough. And I think that's right, isn't it? You know, it's kind of finding the right fit is probably the biggest headache for any hiring manager, business leader, whatever you look at it, you know, a recruiter like myself, kind of, I fall into a couple of those categories, but it's the biggest headache. You know, one, you've got to find people with the right qualifications and experience up front. Then you need the habits, attitude, outlook to match with the existing team. So be interesting to find out a bit more about how that works at your end. But the current employer for yourself and the company that you are helping to build and build this culture is Invader Biosciences. What's, again, it's in the clinical research life science space, which is where kind of I'm focused and our audience is focused. Could you tell us a bit more about the company, just to set the scene, Robert?
Yeah, let me just do a little bit of touch on the first part about how I think about resumes and hiring, then I'll get to Invader. So
yeah, sure.
One of the things I actually say to myself, and I give this advice to other people, is I ask this question, James. I go, who is your resume about? And everybody almost answers the normal way. Well, it's about me. Mm-hmm. And they're like, who else would it be about? It's my resume. And that seems to make sense. And then I go, and you're 100% wrong, right? Just to make it a little bit fun. Your resume isn't about you. Your resume is, do I solve their greatest need? And when you view your resume that way, do I solve their greatest need? You write your resume very differently. So as an example, on my resume, it's very different. I did not do anything traditional. I'm actually trying to answer that question, because when a CEO wants to hire a chief people person, then they're going to assume I already know how to do the HR stuff. That's really not what they're asking. Mm-hmm. What they're asking is he going to fit? Is she going to be great? Is she going to like help our team? And so I write my resume where I actually tell them all that stuff. So I put on a whole bunch of personality profiles and how I work and do things like that. And all the experience stuff is like, I put a little dot in there. Mm-hmm. So anyways, that's a different way I think about that topic. So
no, I'm on board with that, I guess, as well as kind of running a recruiting business. My business partner, Lucy, kind of now is involved in job search strategy and career coaching. And that is, what you've just said summarizes what we're preaching all the time. You know, someone needs to be able to look at it without knowing you as the individual, know what you can effectively do for them. Because, you know, when you're a piece of paper, you're a resume or a digital copy, nobody cares about you in the nicest possible way. Oh. They care about what value you can bring to the table. So I'm so glad that you've hit the nail on the head as to what we are saying to both our candidates and kind of our clients that we take on.
And I'll tell you, it's hard, James. Most people, they write these really long, super boring resumes. And they're like, well, telling you how wonderful. They are. And they're all, and everybody's like, well, they need to know that about them. I'm like, actually, they don't. They just need to know if you're going to solve their greatest need. So why don't you make it easy for them? But I'll tell you this, you got to be brave to do it. Most people are not brave enough and they write the same boring resume. So
that's where you put yourself in the 1 or 2% though, Robert, isn't it? That's where you put yourself in that is. Small category. Cool.
Well, I'll tell you about Invada. Yeah. So Invada, we're a super fun company. So I like to joke around a little bit and just say, yeah, we don't have a very big mission. All we're trying to do, James, is map the chemistry DNA of every plant on Earth. That's all. No big deal. Super easy. Have it done by Christmas, you know? Mm. And so what we're trying to do is find drugs and therapeutics to solve a variety of diseases and problems using the natural plant world. That's the gist. That's what we're doing in Invada. Tons of super cool stuff around AI, ML, data science, what we're doing with high throughput screening and all kinds of stuff. But that's the gist of what Invada is. And it's a fun story. Our founder, our CEO, a guy named Vishwa Kalaru, his mom was sick. He's from India. Mm-hmm. And yes, he was, you know, trying to help her with all that. He's a PhD, you know, as you'd expect. Just kind of got on this idea because there's a lot of natural remedies they use in India. And he's like, well, what if we do that at an industrial scale? And so here we are at Invada.
Wow. Okay. And when was, out of interest, I mean, when was the company founded or started? Is it fairly new? And at what time did you kind of get brought in, as it may be, Robert?
Yeah. So the company started in April of 2019. So we're a pretty young company still. And I started about 18 months ago or something like that, 16 months, 17, something like that.
What sort of employee number? If you, I mean, no one likes to be given a number, but kind of where you sit in terms of how many people were there already?
Yeah, we're just smidge under 200. I think we're at like 195 or something like that.
Yeah.
And so we're right there, on the edge.
How many people were on board when you started?
I think I'm employee 142, but or something like that. But the way the numbering worked, isn't straight sequential. There wasn't a lot of organization of the HR data. So we've hired about 100 people since I've been here, is what it is. So
awesome.
Yeah. And so what's that? 4 years old or so, a little over than that, about 200 people around the globe, big concentrations in the US and India. And then we've got some scattering of people in other places around the globe.
Okay. And look, in terms of, I guess, kind of that growth, that building element where you come in, I guess look, it wasn't kind of a fresh start. It wasn't, you know, you were there from day one. So how does one perhaps go about molding culture, creating culture in your line of work? You know, what kind of gets you out of bed in the morning, gets you thinking on that side of things?
Yeah. I think when you look at a startup, look at it from the chief people lens, it is very instructive on how big the company is. There's a couple competing philosophies. So some companies take the view that says, oh my gosh, hold out hiring an HR person, a chief people officer, as long as you possibly can. And just try to scrape by because once they're here, right, you just get big enough where you have to have them, you know, 500 people or more. And it's just, we'll have to have them, but okay. I wouldn't join that company. I've had, you know, opportunities to join and interview and I always just pass. Like that already tells me they don't value HR strategically. They just view it tactically.
Yeah.
On the other hand, like Invada and other companies, they say, you know what? Once we get to about 150 people, 100 people, like the last startup I was at, I was even before the 100th person. We are going to need someone strategically to help us build this.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing I look at. So when I heard from Invada and I knew their size and what they're thinking of, you know, I was like, okay, let's talk. And then I talked to the CEO, Vishwa, and other people, and they really want to build, you know, back to this idea of architect. Hey, help us understand, how do we be amazing at recruiting? Laszlo Bock has this quote that says, hiring is the most important people activity in any organization. Mm-hmm. Totally true. Because it's going to add or take away from your culture. There's no in between. Either the person will or won't. So you might as well have a good hiring process, which we do, on how to think about that for both technical and culture. So, and then, so you have to think about that whole piece. And then you have the onboarding piece, and then you have employee experience. So we have data and process for how we think about hiring, how we do onboarding, and then how we do employee experience.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not attentive to it, you are going to get a culture. There's no question about that. That's indisputable. The question is, what culture do you want? Do you have the culture you want? Because if you don't pay attention to it and shape it and mold it, it'll just be whatever it is, whoever's the loudest voice. And so you have to pay attention to it.
Okay, awesome. And look, I guess I think a lot of our audience does tend to be kind of job seekers, those looking to transition careers, those looking to climb the ladder. In terms of, I guess you mentioned there kind of how you go about finding the right people, the recruitment piece. You know, often companies bring in the likes of myself to support with that. But from kind of the in-house side of things, what is it? I mean, are you, if you're able to share kind of what you're doing to give kind of our audience an insight as to, yeah, what you value, how you go about it, almost like you did with the resume side of things, to give a bit of an insight as to, look, this is what goes on behind the scenes. This is how our brains work. Understand that, and you're probably going to have a lot more success.
Oh, for sure. So, yeah. So hiring, super fascinating topic. So there's literally, right, not metaphorically, not hyperbolically, but literally 100 years of social science research on how to interview well. Like, we don't lack for knowledge. What we lack is the will to hire well. And most often, James, it's because of simple hubris.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really smart. I mean, why would they have put me in this job if I already didn't know what I was doing? And like, I've already hired, you know, X number of people in my life. I mean, of course I'm good at it. I mean, just look at me. Like, I'm in this job. Of course I'm amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the big problem. If you want to hire well, follow the data. Right. And so the very first thing, the highest correlated job interview technique, selection technique to whether someone will work out in the long run is a work sample.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's the highest R squared. So if you look at the correlation values on about 20 different selection techniques, number one is work sample. And we can talk about what that means and not the abuse of it. There are companies that abuse the work sample and steal people's ideas. We're not talking about that.
Mm.
And just because someone abuses one idea does not mean the idea is wrong. What's wrong is the abuse of the idea.
Yeah.
So there's that. Second most efficacious thing, according to the R squared and the data, is a technical interview. And then the third one is culture. And oftentimes culture fit gets a bad rap because it's used, abused by a few people to say, oh, well, I have to hire people just like me. Same principle, just because there's abuse of a really good idea does not mean we should throw away the idea.
Mm-hmm.
And the culture is, do you align with our values? And not everybody's going to align with every value in every company. That's okay. Mm-hmm. But if you do those three things, okay, your process yield. So I'm Six Sigma trained. I think in that with hiring. Hiring is like manufacturing. So I can kind of explain that if you want. Your process yield should be around 85%. Let's call it between 80 and 90 if you have a really good process. So let's say you hire 100 people over the year. About 85 of those people should be long-term, healthy, great, doing really good work employees.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have, you know, one-ish person, you know, out of 10 who isn't going to work because no process is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
But that's about how I think about it. Does that help give you an
idea? Yeah, I guess that gives kind of a good insight. I guess what I would be interested, I guess, from your point of view, maybe, and in your position is, how do you go about managing that with hiring managers, talent acquisition teams, external agencies? Because I guess probably the most common thing that, you know, we see, and correct me if I'm wrong, but is that culture fit piece. You know, hiring managers, I tend to find sometimes they're not always the best at technical interviews. And therefore, their unconscious bias is to lean towards those who are a culture fit with them. So how do you perhaps go about trying to get a set process structure that is repeatable when you've got various different individuals to deal with? Must be a nightmare.
Well, I mean, it can be, but once you get it going, it's actually not. So first of all, I'll just say hiring's like manufacturing. And so the first principle we have after that is, okay, well, if hiring's like manufacturing, the more work you do upstream, the better you have downstream. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so when you're in a manufacturing plant and you're going to build X, well, I've got to pre-order my material. I got to make sure I have labor, got to set it up, got to prep the machines, like all this work you do. Well, same thing in hiring. Like the way we do it is if you want to start a job, mm-hmm. then you have to do what we call pre-processing. So we require a job description. We have a template format for that 30-90-day plan. You need a Likert scale. Mm-hmm. We do not rate candidates against one another. I think that's one of the big problems in hiring. We rate candidates against an objective standard. So that's your Likert scale. We require you to have your interview questions and we help them with all that. And we give them tools. So like hiring managers are not out there on their own. We've built all of this in a library for them. And then it all gets put into, we use Levers, our applicant tracking system, and all gets built there so that then when we start the interviewing or think about it as processing, like manufacturing, it's all ready to go. Our number one metric in hiring is not speed. Our number one metric is quality, and it's always quality. That doesn't mean we don't want to go fast. We do, but I only want to go as fast as we can while keep quality as the number one metric. Okay. So we have a whole template, a deck on how we do hiring. We train our people leaders. You're not allowed to go hiring unless you've been trained on our whole process. And then we have a recruiting team that helps you. And so we are partners. Like the other thing I believe about recruiting is not, we should not think of hiring managers as our customer. I think a lot of places do that. And I think it drives bad behavior. Mm-hmm. What I always say is, no, recruiting and hiring managers are partners. We work together. In fact, the hiring manager's best friend should be their recruiting team, their HR team. And we have this word picture we use, you know, imagine you're at the end of the year at the holiday Christmas party and managers, you know, she's on stage talking about all the things you did. And hey, welcome to these 15 new people. And she just glances over to the recruiting team and gives a smile. That's the best compliment you can get. We want the hiring manager on stage, not HR. HR's not on stage. But the hiring manager knows she would have never done what she did were it not for the great partnership with HR. That's the word picture we're going for.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that, I guess, that focus on quality. You know, speed is not the number one thing. Quality is. But of course, you want to get that as fast as you can without, you know, putting a detrimental aspect on the quality. How do you necessarily go about that? Or what would you say is the biggest metric for quality? I mean, you mentioned a moment ago kind of work samples. Is that something that you are implementing yourselves? Or how do you, what's the biggest kind of piece of data that you see that kind of says, look, this is going to be a quality hire?
Yeah. So the way to measure it is this process yield that I mentioned, you know, a few minutes ago. And you can look at your hiring over time. What did you do in the last 12 months, 24 months, 36 months? And you can also do a longitudinal study. And I've done this before where you look, say, 3 years back and you say, okay, here's the scores. Because again, we do 1, 2, 3, 4 as our scoring rubric. I don't believe in like a 5-point scale. We'll talk about that. Why? And then we do the same thing on performance. So you can look at it over time. And what's that process yield? And if you're around 85, 90, you know, maybe low 80s is okay. Depending, you know, you're doing good. So there's a way to actually measure this. But in terms of how do we get there, James, I tell people there's two things you want to do. If you want to have a really great hiring process that is both speed and high quality, you need to do two things. Follow the process. Where managers get gummed up is they're like, oh, geez, I'm going to just go off and do this other thing because, you know, whatever reason. Well, that gums up the whole thing. Just like in manufacturing, you got to have a consistent process. Mm-hmm. By the way, it all helps tamp down on bias and helps with your diversity and things like that. So there's other benefits too.
Yeah.
The second thing you have to do, manage your queue every single day, like literally 5 days a week. And when I tell managers, I'm like, recruiting can always run as fast as you can. I'm never worried that recruiting is going to be behind. Like I zero worry about that. But when you, the manager, don't manage your queue for 5 days, when you don't look at it in there, when you have 80 candidates in there who've been waiting, then like, what do you do?
Yeah.
So all you need to do is go 10 to 15 minutes a day, James. And as far as you get is great. If you only have 10 minutes today as a hiring manager, great. Review as many resumes as you can get. And we'll, and you'll end up with both high quality and speed if you do those two things.
I like that. And I mean, it's a bit refreshing to hear that there are those processes in place. I guess from my standpoint, sometimes as an agency recruiter, I'm dealing with both HR and hiring managers at times.
Right.
And, you know, there's often it's a backlog. And if I'm dealing with, say, five different clients at one time, juggling all of the candidates, and I'm like,
yeah,
I need to get back to this person, I need to get back to this person. Like, can I get an update? And as, like, it would just be good to know that actually it's going to get churned through at some point. And I know that kind of the average response date and time will be, I don't know, whether it's 24, 48, 72 hours, at least I can manage expectations, because I think that is just what applicants want, isn't it? They don't care necessarily. I mean, obviously,
right, I can live with a no, but I just want to know, right? Yeah. If I'm not the candidate, that's okay. I mean, I might be disappointed, but at least you didn't ghost me. So I'll give you two from our side. So, so far this year, starting January 1st, we've had more than 10,000 applicants to all of our jobs around the globe. Okay. We have ghosted zero of those people. And so our ghosting metric is we get back to you at least within 5 days. Right. So you apply on Monday, you're going to hear by Friday. And we have done that for every single candidate. So it's clearly possible if you want to do it. Right. The problem is most HR recruiting, hiring managers, they're like, I don't know, they applied. I'll just get back to them. They ought to be happy. You know, they applied. I'll do it when I do it. That's terrible. Like, if you actually care about your reputation as a company and candidate experience, which we manage, so I have a whole dashboard on candidate experience, you shouldn't do that. That's just like, and you don't need to. So we've done that with all of ours. And then another metric or another tool that we do is when a job gets 50 candidates or more that we have not responded to, we actually turn off the job. Publicly. What is the point of getting 122 applicants if you can't even review the 55 you have? Right. And so again, if you care about candidate experience, you care about all these things, and it's literally a toggle switch and lever, like blink, and now it's not publicly facing, so it doesn't get more candidates.
Yeah.
And when it gets through their queue, then great, we go doink if they need more candidates. And so we also have metrics about how we think about how many, what are your CTQs, critical to quality, and all that other stuff.
But it's awesome that you actually have this plan and focus, because I, you know, I often see probably the other end of the scale where it's very much employers look at it as me, 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 you know, more candidates equals more options. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be quality options, because you're maybe going to be not providing the best candidate experience. Whereas it seems that you have kind of, you know, purposely chosen to provide a good, the fact that you've even got a ghosting metric says a lot about you. The fact that you, you know, you toggle things off so that you're not overwhelming hiring managers and the team says a lot. And therefore the candidate experience must be much better. And it's because you're not being selfish. I guess in doing so, I'm guessing, I mean, so how do you manage the or track the candidate experience side of things? Do you get feedback from people? How do you go about that? Because I would imagine that by comparison to some of the horror stories that I hear about, that you would be getting rave reviews. So you're probably going to be getting when this goes out, Robert, you're probably going to get hit with loads of applications, which we make amazing, but you'll have to toggle that button.
That's right. Well, here, I'll just show it to you. So this is what we do.
I may need to give you permission to share screen. Bear with me.
Yeah.
Advanced sharing options. See if I can do this. You can share all. Okay, there you go. You should be able to.
Right. Okay. All right, here we go. So the first thing I believe in, James, is I believe in using the NPS rubric, Net Promoter Score. So if people aren't familiar with that, you can look that up. But I'm a believer in Net Promoter Score.
Yeah.
Then we have this candidate survey dashboard. So every single candidate who gets through to what we call our hiring team interview, so there's like a phone screen. And then if you move from phone screen over to the hiring team interview, then every single one of those people gets a survey. We keep it super simple. It takes less than a minute. It's three questions.
Yeah.
Right. Rate your experience. Was your interview scheduled timely? How likely are you to recommend Invada? Right. So classic question. If you can get above 70, you're doing really, really well. And you can see our scores are above 70. And a lot of times in NPS, in sort of the employee NPS world and candidate, oftentimes if you get a 50, there's like, oh my gosh, you're doing like amazing. Like, I love a high bar though. So we set a really high bar at 70. And then we also can click on this and people give us comments as well. And so we track this, you know, all the time. So, and we can see our participation rate since the beginning of the year, 8 out of 10 people take it, which again is a really good number. So we can trust the data.
I would say so. And I think that is probably like that because you're doing things from right from the outset. I think if it was a rubbish experience, probably that participation rate wouldn't even be that high.
Yeah. Yeah. So I can stop sharing now, but yeah, so that's how we do it.
That's pretty awesome. And as I said, I think it's just that the attention to this culture that you are trying to promote. I mean, if you were to, I guess kind of as the CPO, what is the type of culture that you are? I mean, clearly it's about the employees and about the candidate experience. But when you kind of joined the company and you spoke to your CEO, Vishwa, for example, what was it that you perhaps outlined on your resume or on your application that you said, look, this is what I would be looking to achieve, and this is why I think it's important to you? Because I think that's almost taking a step back with, you know, from what we're seeing now and all these reviews and metrics, etc. What was it that you kind of outlined as your own personal mission, Robert? I'm quite interested in that side of things, actually.
Yeah. So I'm a believer that it is possible to have a really great job you love and be paid well and be treated well. So I also coach football, high school football, so soccer.
Yeah.
But over there, they would know football.
It's football to me, Robert. Yeah, you're talking the right lingo.
And Ted Lasso. I mean, you know.
There you go. Yeah.
So we have a why and we have a what. So every team I've coached for a couple decades now, our why is to build men of good character or women of good character, because I coach both.
Mm-hmm.
And that's our why. But our what is to win football matches. And so it's similar to this idea on quality and speed. Quality is our number one metric, but let's go really fast.
Mm-hmm.
When I coach football, I'm like, I want possession of the ball 100% of the time. I'm completely selfish inside the lines. I want the ball all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to go as fast as we can possibly go with the ball. But I want the ball more than I want to go fast. But we can go fast and keep the ball. And we can build women and men of good character and win. Sometimes it's like, oh, you got to be tough and ruthless blah, 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 and act like a jerk if you want to win. Mm-hmm. I totally don't believe that. And we've won a lot of trophies. And my players we always are told by the refs and the other teams how great they are to play against us, even when we pound the tar out of them because we beat them because we have possession of the ball. Same at work. You actually can have great people leaders, treat employees super well, pay them well. They love what they do. And that's my passion. That's why I do this. Because I really do believe you can have a great place to work, treat people well, pay them well, have great character, have great people leaders, and you can win in the marketplace. And your company can be number one, number two, however you want to call it, have great revenue, great profits, win, delighted customers. I think you can do all of it. Mm. It's really a choice. And do you want to choose to do that? It's hard, but do you want to do hard things? Or do you want to do easy things? I like doing the hard things because I really believe in the end, there's more fulfillment there. That's why I do what I do.
Awesome. I love that kind of mentality and, you know, kind of similarities with your outside interest as well, Robert, in terms of kind of how you play at work, how you play outside of work. So very much appreciate all of that. I guess in terms of kind of it sounds like you are creating a good culture, but if you were to kind of maybe summarize it in your words as to how you would describe it, and maybe list any of the kind of personal successes or company successes that you have had, what would you say?
So I'll just share a doc. We're getting ready to promulgate this. We have not promulgated it yet, James. So this is a little bit of a preview, but that's okay. So let me get onto here. Okay, so here's how we're going to do this. So one of the things we've been talking about, we call ourselves the S team, so senior team,
right?
Who work for Vishwa.
Mm.
And so we've been working on this document, and I've titled it Culture Coherence. And so it starts with, you know, why are we here? And so I've got it there. Then what are we going to do? And I mentioned that at the top of the broadcast here. One of the things I said during the interview, one of the things I believe in is just like companies make a promise to their customers. Mm-hmm. So I'm a fan of Subaru cars. So like the Subaru love promise, but you know, lots of companies have promises. We wrote an employee promise, right? And it's listed right there. This people create all value. That's my brand. Mm-hmm. And that's what I believe. So when you get with me with HR, what you get is people create all value. And so why do we care so much about people? Well, that's because they create all value. Does the airplane just create itself? Nope. Did the internet just like spring up overnight magically? And we went like, oh, I guess we didn't know about that. No, people do all this stuff.
Mm.
So if people create all value, which is true, then we ought to have a great place where people work. So we wrote this promise. Here's our values. So we do a culture interview. We talk about our values. You know, our first priority is one in VEDA. And you can see I'm crossing out some of these things because I put them below. Mm-hmm. So that's our values. That's how we're going to behave to each other. Okay. Then you say, well, how are we going to work together now that we know how we're going to behave? First thing you got to do is trust. Right. If you don't have trust in life, you have nothing, whether it's with your marriage, with your kids, with your football team, at work, your boss. Say, great. Now we'll get to trust. How are we actually going to talk to each other? And so what you can see I've done in all of these is I put in a graphic as well as some words, because some people are more visual, they like graphics, some people more word-based. So I'm trying to balance both of them, mm-hmm. right? This is how we're actually going to communicate. And this is our language, kind honesty. I want you to be honest, but I don't want you to be a big jerk.
Mm-hmm.
You're just a clean symbol if you're right, but you're a jerk. And same thing, like, you know, the other way. So then, okay, we'll probably disagree. So here's how we're going to disagree. Here's how we're going to handle it. Here's the language we're going to use. Here's how we're going to solve disagreement. Oh my gosh, there's the speed versus alignment. Like, mm-hmm. Oh, we're going fast. No, we need to be aligned. Like, here's some ways we're going to think about it so we can have this language in here. And then the last thing is, how are we going to make decisions? Once you have all that, and here's how we're going to do it. So here's our graphic, here's our text, so that now we know how to behave. So when you say, you know, to this question of, well, what does the culture look like? That's what it looks like. If we behave according to that, and we all treat each other that way in both our behaviors and how we work together, we're going to do great.
Amazing. And again, I like the fact that it's documented, because I think that, you know, kind of culture is sometimes an afterthought for many organizations. And when you start trying to bring people in too late to mold a culture, it's, you know, my opinion is that's not really possible. You've inherited it. That is the culture, you know. Trying to, you know, backtrack from there is just going to be very difficult if you don't have or haven't had a clear strategy. So sounds like things are certainly going well. Sounds like your success rate in terms of growth has been pretty incredible since kind of you joined. So you've added a kind of 100 to the headcount. In terms of those who have stayed, have you managed to maintain that kind of 85% kind of retention ratio that you spoke about?
We're at 97 today.
Sorry?
We're at 97 today.
Wow.
Now, it's great. We should be happy. Let's celebrate the good. It won't always be 97, right? And this is what Vishwa and I talk about.
Yeah.
Like, we just had a board meeting last week and I told him that number, right? And the philosophy behind the number, right? Mm. And we're at 97. So let's celebrate. But let's also not beat ourselves up. If we slip back to like 89 after 2 years of data or 3 years, like, still celebrate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so That's okay. If we can be, you know, get the process yield that we should expect in Six Sigma terms, it's called your entitlement, for if any Six Sigma fans are listening, then that's what that is. If we can be a little bit better than that, I'd like to be closer to the 90 than kind of the 85, you know, and we should be able to do that. So.
Amazing stuff. And look, Robert, we've talked a lot about how you've created kind of this, I guess, kind of experience, how you've created kind of what sounds to be like a winning organization with Invader. Would you say that the culture has maybe changed since you joined, or has it kind of, it's been as planned, because it has been planned?
Yeah, I think, so like I said, we're just at 200, let's call it 201, a couple below that. I think when you hit 150 is the inflection point. So you have this first inflection point, kind of zero to maybe B50, where everybody can stand up, have a meeting, we're all aligned, sit back down and start working. Once you get past that, now it starts like, oh, that doesn't all work anymore. We need a little bit more discipline, culture, routines. You need more freedom, right? Give people freedom, whether that's the people leaders or individual contributors. And then when you hit 200, you hit this other inflection point. Now you really need a written culture. You need to have good documentation, like I was just showing, of how are we going to think about things, so that even though you and I, let's say James, just met, we're both in Invada, we have a common language to talk on, because you and I just got put on this project team together, but we don't know each other. Well, if we don't have any common language, we don't have any common ways of working together, you're just going to do what you've always done, not because you're mean or a jerk, and I'm going to do the same thing, because what else would I do? But if you've installed this common ways of working together across the entire company, now we can scale it. And that's the point of written stuff that I have, and how we're going to promulgate it. We'll put it on our town halls, post on our wiki, all that kind of stuff. And that's our language going forward. And we've done all that, you know, since I started. But I would also say that's why, one of the reasons they hired me. Like, we talked about all this during the interview, and how I think about it. And my work sample was actually on this topic when I interviewed.
Awesome stuff. Well, Robert, I feel like you and I will end up just going completely left field here, talking about HR recruitment, how to get the best people, et cetera, et cetera. So we may well have to save that, all of that, for another day. Otherwise, we'll just run out of time here. But look, in terms of kind of plans for, I guess, the next steps at Invader, further expansion, innovation, what is the next stage looking like for yourself? Is there plans for further growth, or?
Yeah, I mean, the way it works in what we call a tech bio company, that's kind of a new term over the last 5 years. It's often been called biotech, and that's fine if we use it. But the reason it's called a tech bio is because the platform is first. Normally in, you know, the history of biotech, you know, there's some way you may find a molecule or a small compound, and there's all this chemistry and biology you have to do to see if it's going to work. And that's fine. That's good. What we're trying to do in the tech bio world is we built a platform first. So through mass spectrometry and the stuff I mentioned earlier with AI and ML, we're able to industrialize plants and see what their efficacious compounds, molecules are. And so that's the platform. When we find a hit, we hand it off then to what we call the pipeline team, chemistry biologists, to really narrow down and see if it's going to work. Then you find something there, you have to go into the clinic and do clinical trials. That's the next stage for Invada. We got the platform going, always more work to do, pipeline. We now have to be a clinical company, because you still have to meet all of the requirements, you know, of any given country that you're in, you know, to make sure the drug is safe before it goes out to humans, of course. And so that's the next stage for us. We've got an exciting library. We've got an exciting hit list of things we think could be really, really helpful to patients. So now we have to start clinical trials, which we will start doing this year.
Wow. Exciting times to come in that case. And I'm sure there's going to be even further growth as you get into the, I guess, the clinical operations side of things. So very, very interested to follow this story. And perhaps we'll have to get you on at some point down the line when you're that 300, 500, 1,000 plus, just to see how things are then looking. But look, before we I let you go, look, we always close the show, Robert, with a quick fire questions round. So as much as this show has been a little bit different to our usual running order, these will be fairly similar, and I'll kick off with the first question, which is, you know, if you were to give yourself or your younger self any advice, what would the one piece of advice perhaps be that you would give to your younger self?
Learning is not a straight line.
Okay, I like it.
It's true with my footballers. You're going to try, fail. And, you know, if you're trying to get the various moves down and spacing and all that, it's okay to fail. That's how we learn. It's, you know, the way I coach people at work is the same thing. The way I coach people leaders, the way I raise my kids is learning is okay. Try stuff, fail. It's okay. And I would much rather live in a world where we fail and spill some milk now and then and learn and get better than don't spill any milk at all. So, and it's okay.
True story. And look, in terms of the number one book or resource that you would recommend for our audience, what would you suggest?
Well, I usually take this picture of this little bookcase. I have about five of them. But if I can only give you one, read Work Rules by Laszlo Bock.
Work Rules, Laszlo Bock. I'll have to add that to my own reading list to check that one out. And then look, we've talked a lot about culture, but in terms of kind of your immediate team, or actually, or Invader in general, what are the top three qualities that you value most when putting teams together, companies together?
Yeah, you have to have a bigger purpose than yourself. That's the first thing. So whether that's at work and how we're going to help patients, my football team, our why is to build women and men of good character. Our why is more important than our what. What we do is win, but the why is bigger and more important. Same thing at work. Same thing at home. You need a bigger purpose than just my self-satisfaction, my money, whatever. So that's the first thing on culture. Second thing in culture that I would say you have to have is it's got to be promulgated. Whatever you decide are your company values, because different companies have different ones, it's okay. But they have to be promulgated. And what I mean by that is not just that they're on the wall. You have to live it, right? Every company has their values on the wall. In 90 whatever percent of those, the employees walk by and either literally or metaphorically roll their eyes because they know it's not true. Right. So you have to have a bigger purpose. You got to promulgate it and live it. Right. That's the thing. And then the third thing is you have to constantly teach it. So I have this thing I talk about in the hiring process, and this is true for other processes too, is this. Every process not attended to will tend toward entropy. That's just how it goes. That's just true in life. It's true in anything, right? Manufacturing, processing. So if you don't attend to your culture and every day you're working on it, it'll tend toward entropy.
Very, very true. And the last question then, Robert, and I think I probably know the answer to this one, but you might surprise me with a curveball. That when you're, sure, when you're not doing this, when you're not kind of building companies and assisting with culture and candidate experience, what's your favorite thing outside of work?
Yeah. So definitely family. I mean, of course, football. I love football. That's the point. But yeah, just family time. So we have two adult kids, and we also have now a teenager. She turned 13 a month or so ago. So lucky we have a big gap between the two older kids and our little one. And so we went all the way back to Diaperland then, and now she's a teenager. So you know, family time is great. So I'm married. We just hit 30 years of marriage last month. And so congrats. She's my best friend. She's amazing. And so hanging out with her, doing date night, hanging out in the evening with our daughter, just sitting. We like to sit outside and eat dinner in the summer and talk about life and what are we doing? And, you know, so good family time. So
awesome stuff. Look, Rob, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. You seem like such a nice, genuine guy. And look, for anyone that wants to learn more either about yourself or about Invadia, what's the best way to either reach out or find out more about the business?
Yeah, so Invadia, I mean, you just go to our website, invadiabio.com, and check us out there. We're also on LinkedIn. And for me, I have a LinkedIn profile. It's open. You know, anybody can check it out.
Awesome stuff. Well, look, thank you very much again for being part of the show. Been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you for having me on, James. Appreciate it.